pleasure and complete privilege to welcome Diva Marie Beck, Dr. Diva Marie Beck, who is a clinician, a nursing scholar, an author, holistic health educator, and international citizen activist who has taught and worked across the United States and around the world. Her recent scholarship addresses new historical research connecting Florence Nightingale's life and her work with 21st century health challenges. Diva is a co-author on the forthcoming American Nurses Association book entitled Florence Nightingale's Blueprint for 21st Century Healthcare, Healing, Leading, Global Visioning. Diva, welcome, welcome, welcome. To have you here is such a treat and such a privilege. So glad you could be here today.
Thank you, Georgiana. It's a pleasure to be here.
I cannot express to you the joy and excitement that I hear from the nurses when I share the wonderful work that you're doing with them. So I know that the audience is going to be just as delighted and as joyful to hear that you are an individual out in the world who is creating a civil global society, which the title in itself is really intriguing. Would you jump right in and begin to tell us, starting with your wonderful background and how you got into this whole health for the planet and how you got into this whole wonderful way of being in the world, starting with, you know, your background in nursing.
Okay, that's actually a good way to start, because a story is always a great way to remember what we're discussing, the ideas. Excuse me, my throat tickled just for a second. The idea that got born, what I'm working on now, got born in a interesting way. In the 1980s, I had been studying holistic health concepts and working as best as I could in holistic health, bringing holistic approaches to my clinical nursing. And by the way, I have 27 years of critical care experience in various settings in Southern California and in the metro Washington, D.C. area. But in the 80s, I was doing my best to bring holistic concepts and holistic approaches to hospital settings, and also developing my own private practice. And during that time, I published a book called The Pleasure Connection, How Endorphins Affect Our Health and Happiness. And I was working on developing workshops and sharing how the value of holistic approaches for nurses would support patient care. That happened for me in the 80s. And then around 1989, after I had been working in California and in the Pacific Northwest and even in Hawaii and the South Pacific in Australia and New Zealand on this, all of a sudden I hit midlife crisis in 1989 and 1990, and I began to realize that holistic health is a very beautiful concept and clearly what each individual needs for their own health, but that the world was very much in need of healing. And at that time, in the early 90s, as you probably, most of you remember, the Rio Summit was coming into view, and we were starting to look very much at the environmental issues that the whole world was concerned about. And the Rio Summit on Earth, the United Nations Summit, began to clarify that for humanity. Mm-hmm. And later, the Beijing Summit did the same for clarifying for women. The issues around the well-being of women and the rights of women. And I began, my midlife crisis set me on a track saying, well, I need to know about this. This is really for me in my own path. I need more exposure to this. I need to be involved in this. And I thought at that point in time, as I began to get excited about working on environmental issues and making friends with people who went to Rio, I didn't actually go, and making friends with people who went to Beijing, et cetera, and going to meetings before those meetings and follow-up meetings afterwards and other related meetings in the East Coast of Canada and the East Coast of Washington, D.C., in Washington, D.C. and New York City, I began to think that I was walking away from nursing, and I was literally putting in my time doing critical care shifts to pay my bills, and that I was walking from nursing, that I was really seeing that nursing was really only addressing the health of individuals, mostly in hospital and clinic settings, and that wasn't really my path. I was emerging into my own new sense of myself, working on global health with global citizen activists from other disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
And then something amazing happened. I was invited through the work that I was doing by then to attend the United Nations summit in Istanbul that was focusing in on human settlements and all of the issues that come together by seeing how people live in villages, in towns, in cities, and in large megalopolises, especially in the developing world, where places like Jakarta and Delhi and other places where there are huge, Bangkok, there are huge issues that all converge around how people live together in their cities.
What a fascinating summit, huh?
Yes, it really was. And I was tasked, actually invited, to bring with my colleagues a series of programs, actually, panels and presentations that focused in on health in the context of cities. And it was of course a huge topic, and we brought in a number of experts from various kinds of places. But that was in 1996. But the reason why this part of the story is so pivotal for me is that when we were in preparation for that summit at the United Nations headquarters in New York City, it was suggested to me that I look at the fact, the wonderful coincidence, synchronicity, that Florence Nightingale began her work in Istanbul for the Crimean War in the 1850s. And when that was suggested, I said she did. I didn't even realize that. I had only had that Nightingale was that she had nearly killed herself for 24 months during some war in the 1800s, that she was somehow the lady of the lamp, and that somehow she had started modern nursing. And that was all I knew about her. But as it turned out, a number of people pulled their connections together, and during the United Nations summit, we were able to create an international tribute to Florence Nightingale at the barracks where she began her life's work. The barracks are called Scutari, and it's actually an active Turkish army base still. But the old building is still there. That's where they still work. The building where she actually housed soldiers and treated them and helped them wounds and did her best to keep them alive. So anyway, we created that summit, and I was privileged to speak there. And when that happened, I had to go back to the archives and start to look at her life in the context of what the United Nations summit was doing, which, of course, by 1996 was saying, what kind of a world do we want in the 21st century? And how do we create the world that we want to see? And again, in the same scene that in Rio with the Environment Summit and in Beijing with the Women's Summit, the part of the answer, a very dynamic aspect of the answer, is empowering individuals at grassroots levels to work on the issues that are of global concern locally. And of course, Nightingale did that in huge ways, and she built a 50-year career of saying, I have a calling inside myself. My spirit is calling me to get in and address the issues that are of concern to me. And of course, for her, it was the health of people who were impoverished and couldn't have nursing because they could pay for it, and health care, the health of individuals, the health of communities. And she got very busy with the health of the British Army, and then later the health of the citizens of India and the entire British Commonwealth. She was concerned with the health of women and the health of children. She was concerned with health literacy. Well, her list goes on and on. But she was modeling for me what other people were doing in other areas for the environment, for example, with Rio, and in Beijing for women's issues. Nightingale was modeling what many more of us are doing today as active citizens, saying, my spirit is calling me to work on this specific issue, and I know that if I'm working locally, I can contribute to the global network of people working on this. So that's what got me on fire about Nightingale and her relevance for the 21st century.
Well, isn't it interesting, Diva, that here you are, you were a nurse, nursing for over 25 years,
yes,
or many, many years, and gone through a nursing training, which, of course, its basis is in Florence Nightingale, and it took how many years, a couple of decades, for the spirit of nursing to reach out and really possess you, so to speak. And isn't that a statement about the need for the work that you're doing? Doesn't it tell us something about where nursing has evolved to, that so many nurses don't know about the tremendous contribution in a global sense, and certainly in a metaphorical sense, that she made to all nursing, and that the calling that you've been touched by is the calling to return to the wonderful foundations that she laid out. So what is your experience of being in nursing for so many years,
mm-hmm,
and then falling in love with it, as you did back in 1996 again?
Well, actually, as you're speaking, I'm really realizing that, again, that Nightingale herself had a broad, her scope of practice was both to focus in on the individual soldier at the barracks where I was privileged to speak, where she began her work. She was focused in on an individual soldier in the same way that we are focused in on our individual patients now. But across her career, she evolved her scope of nursing practice to be both at the micro level, the individual and family level, and at the macro level, working on global health and briefing national leaders and developing projects that had a global scope. She saw that all as nursing, and in 1893 she wrote Sick Nursing and Health Nursing, where she talked about how some nurses should indeed be bringing our nursing skills and our nursing lenses and our nursing approaches to helping people to be comfortable when they're sick, to recover if they can, to optimize, even if they're dying, to optimize and make sure that they have the very best quality of life, to make sure that chronically ill people have the best possible chance of optimizing their chronic condition. But she also saw the larger issue or the larger scope or arena for nursing, the promotion of health at community levels and on larger scales, which she herself as a nurse did. So now in the 20th century, because for a number of reasons that we could spend several hours on, but just to briefly say that the 20th century began to focus in on the treatment of disease with many new advances that are, of course, quite exciting. The first of which was the early development of antibiotics that made it so that people didn't die of infections, etc. Well, that began the trend toward disease treatment and medical care, and all of the technology and all of the pharmaceutical expenses and all of the brand new surgical techniques, and all of these things came into being to do some good, certainly. There are wonderful things that have come from that, but the focus has been on medical care and disease treatment, and because there was it's such a huge, if I may say so, industrial complex, nurses have been involved in being in support of that because we've had, we've needed to have money for our careers, and there's many of us have had, you know, we've paid our livelihoods in support of that, and we've done our best to bring the nursing approach to support health and healing and recovery in the context of medical treatment. But that has, as Nightingale would say, that is still just sick nursing. It's not health nursing.
Well, that is, yes, and that is a wonderful, I want you to hold that thought because we're going to take a very short break for a wonderful PSA message.
When we
come back, let's talk about sick nursing and well nursing. The point you're making is wonderful, how, you know, nursing has evolved away from the very principles and the tenets that Nightingale actually first put forth about the function and the purpose. So let's take a short break. Don't go away, everybody. We'll be right back.
This is Brad Paisley. A great song has a way of tugging at your heart, but nothing tugs at my heart like the kids who are being helped at Shriners Hospitals. I know firsthand because I'm a Shriner. The Shriners provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care to kids, totally free of charge. And they combine that care with progressive research and innovative teaching programs. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers in their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Welcome to Flight 38.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm sorry, you can't sit there.
Isn't it open seating?
This is the whites only section.
Whites only?
Mm-hmm. You'll need to move back to the colored section.
Ma'am, I'm a vice president.
Sir, please move back and we'll be on our way.
Fine.
Imagine what America would be like today if Martin Luther King never had a dream. To learn about the Martin Luther King National Memorial Project in Washington, D.C., visit buildthedream.org. A public service message from the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Foundation and the Ad Council.
And we're back. We are talking to Dr. Diva Marie Beck, who has much to share with us. When we left before the break, Diva was sharing with us the wellness and sickness nursing that Florence Nightingale had, you know, started. And she's also going to be talking to us right now about how this work has touched her and has inspired her to the work that she's doing right now. So, Diva, if you would, please tell us about how all of that moved and touched you and brought you to where you are right now.
I love to go back to Nightingale because her life is so illustrative, instructive about all of this. It really is so holistic. It's physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, and at the core of it, it's our spirits that we feel called to be in support of. Nightingale, when she was 17, she said, she was sitting under a tree in her parents' yard that actually still is standing, and she said she received a call from God sitting there under that tree, to go and serve the best that she could by becoming a nurse. And of course she went through a great deal to bring that into being, but she never lost sight of that calling to serve humanity. And I think that that's very universal with regard to many, many, many nurses feel that, and I certainly do. That wonderful, wonderful feeling that we have over and over again when we are able to be present for in whatever way we also, perhaps we're in critical care, perhaps we're suctioning out a trach, or treating a severe wound, or helping people in rehab to push themselves a little further, or in hospice settings to help people to have the last days of their life be as beautiful and as wonderful and as comfortable as can be. Helping people to recover from surgeries and understand it, or helping people to understand their diabetes. All of those things that we do, we bring our presence and our sense of how wonderful it is for us as nurses to be in interaction in a sort of circle of energy between the patient who is in a very vulnerable place in their life and us, where we can bring our energy and our support and our caring and our knowledge to support that flow of healing, recovery, comfort, whatever it may be. Now, I've had thousands of those interactions, those moments, those beautiful healing moments with patients, and it's a wonderful, wonderful calling to have. Nightingale realized that she needed that too when she said yes to that call from God. And I think that's in part why we've gotten into the 20th century and into the early 21st century. We really, nurses, in the main, they love to have those interactions. And when you get into the larger, wider world of global health or even community health, you might be tempted to think that you don't have that opportunity to interact with people one-on-one at that very special, teachable, healing moment. So for me, that's the beauty of nursing.
Well, Diva, you, in our first conversation that I had with you regarding this topic, you said that one of your main priorities, what your top priority is at this point, is to invite the 10 million nurses around the world into this global arena, this global healing, this global nursing society that you envision, and to reinvite the nurse to come back to the roots of what drew her or him, mostly hers. I know that about 97% of nurses are women, which seems appropriate because it is such a nurturing and it is such a truly innately nourishing way of being with people. And your goal is to reinvite the remembrance, and that's what we talk about on this show as well, to reinvigorate and remember the roots of what healing is all about. And the work you're doing is just so important and so essential to return nursing back to the service of what it was designed for. Because as you know, and I'm sure that you will speak to this, the condition of nursing today is very dire. Do you want to speak about the reinvigorating and also the dire condition, all as kind of one global topic?
Yes, again, in 15 seconds or less.
In 10 seconds, can you address this issue? Yeah.
Yes, well, everybody who knows, who's a nurse or who is aware of nursing, who's listening to this show, will nod their heads yes at this moment. The wonderful holistic nursing researcher Janet Quinn put it so very well. The species of nursing is an endangered species now.
Mm-hmm.
And the places where we work, for a number of reasons in different parts of the world, are unsustainable habitats for us as nurses. And interestingly, Janet makes the point also that because it's unsustainable for nurses, of course it's unsustainable for patients. But now, because of the increasingly severe nursing shortage, not only of nurses themselves, but also of nursing educators who can be the people who help new nurses to come and be, and the retention of nurses, we can do a whole show just on that. But, you know, I've looked at this challenge, this, which is really, it's a thirst for caring, and in the climate of making, putting MRIs first and profit taking first and pharmaceuticals first, and in the climate where the large problems like the pandemic of AIDS in Africa are occurring, it's so much harder to bring caring to our patients and to the world. And so, of course, there's a shortage because caring hasn't been valued. Our ability to care has not been valued, and nurses have not been valued.
Which leads me that I must, if you listen to this program, you know that I must do this.
Yes.
I must rip off the scab of this topic, which is part of our job together, and really address what you and I had talked about previously. And this is a hard one to wade into, but we really have to talk about it. We talked about a metaphor that dealt with the loss of feminine energy.
Yeah.
Nursing had always been, I mean, I was trained back in the early 60s. You were trained, I think, in the 60s as well.
Early 70s.
When it was a very different world in terms of what was brought to the table about what was nursing. What did you do? Actually, how did you do nursing?
Right.
Mechanically, physically, emotionally, in terms of
why did you do it?
What has happened now, for the good and for the bad, is that there has been a shifting in terms of that feminine energy. We have gotten into the MRI mentality. We have gone from a dominantly procreative, creative, healing, nurturing energy in nursing to a very mechanical, technological, business-orientated way of being in nursing. We also talked about the metaphor of why we have such a pathological culture. And we know that when the energies, when the the masculine and the feminine, when the anima and the animas are out of balance, that what we see is this terrible dis-ease or schism. Now, you very eloquently addressed this, and you spoke so beautifully to the whole renaissance, the necessity to create a renaissance of nursing energy that is in its core in the feminine, the earth mother, the earth nature, the earth energy. So would you bring us on that journey that you have taken for yourself and that you want to invite the rest of us into?
Well, yes. It again, back to my midlife crisis and the desire to start to learn about how to become an effective global citizen working in civil society and working with networks of people that were working at global issues. Again, it was the same sort of calling, the calling almost to be in interaction with our world, with our planet, and with others of like mind, heart, and spirit in the same way that I had been and still have in the last little while, work in my clinical practice. The dynamic, the energy between me and the presence that I can bring for the sake of health and healing and recovery and comfort. That same dynamic, bringing it just a little bit, drawing the circle just a little bit larger and seeing myself as someone that can bring that same dynamic to the world and to the networks of people that I'm working with and to the needs to the needs of the larger society, to human beings. And to bring feminine caring energy everywhere, and where we know that it's needed in hospitals and in clinics and in, quote, American or North American or developing world health, we know that our caring, feminine caring energy is needed there, but our feminine caring energy is needed in our world on a global scale. And nurses are at the vanguard of that. We're at the leading edge of being able to bring that so that we could become, actually, and 3 billion people on this planet are women. And there are many people who are looking at the larger issues of the health of our planet and the sustainability of humanity for the next 100 years are saying that women need a renaissance to be awakened to the power of what they can bring to all of the issues that we now so know so very well, the war-torn areas, the places where terrorism is bred, the areas where people are in starvation and in incredible dire straits, the places where children become child soldiers, where little boys who don't have mothers turn to guns and run with gangs and work and do war in Africa, and places where environmental pollution is causing cancer in high rates. All of those things, women need to be involved in all those areas. And who better but nurses, who already know so much about caring and so much about how health can be restored.
So it really is that what you're zeroing in on is this reality of not only inviting nurses, but the innateness to nursing, which
That's
is feminine
right.
energy. Women are innately nurturers. We are, our biology, our hardwiring is such that we are, as because we're co-creators with the divine of life, we bring life through our bodies, we have this innateness to nurture and to nourish and to preserve. So I think what is important here, and it's an even bigger picture, and it even goes beyond just the nursing a profession. It says women, we are nurses, women and nurses, so that they become equal. We see women as nurses professionally, but we also see women as nurses on a spiritual level.
That's right. And we also see nurses as focused women who have been able to take our innate nurturing capability to nurture our young, to nurture our families, and to another level where we have a broad range of theory and practice to apply to bringing caring beyond just caring for family. But all of our premises, all of our approaches to say that the health of people and the health that people, the promotion of their health, and all of the reasons why caring is as important as treating disease.
Absolutely. And the work that you're doing is so critical to healing the globe. And when we come back, we're going to take another 15 minutes. Has gone clipping by. We're going to take a short break, Diva.
Uh-huh.
When we come back, let's talk more about the metaphor of the need for global healing, and let's look at some pathologies. And we had the most wonderful comments to make, and we had a wonderful conversation that I would love for you to share again with the audience.
Okay.
So when we come back, we're going to do that, so don't go away.
Oh, great shot. Hi, I'm Robert.
And I'm Mabel.
Now that we're retired, we have more time for doing the things we've always wanted, like shrugging off the future of our nation's youth.
It's so easy. All you have to do is not support after-school programs. 15 million youngsters in this country are left unsupervised after school, and our genuine lack of concern can help make sure they find trouble, not opportunities.
Doing nothing has never been this easy.
Rummage sales, winery tours,
yes.
Tai Chi classes, oh, there's all sorts of great ways to ignore the needs of children. If you want to show how little you care about after-school programs, don't call 1-866-KIDS today.
And don't log on to afterschoolnow.org. Mabel, it's a wonderful feeling to make such a negative impact.
I love you, Robert.
After-school programs. Ignore them and they'll go away. A public service message brought to you by the After School Alliance, the Mott Foundation, and the Ad Council.
AIDS has created over 14 million orphans worldwide. That's the equivalent of every child under 5 in America, with nobody to watch over them. To help, please go to apathyislethal.org. AIDS is preventable. Apathy is lethal.
Brought to you by the United Nations Foundation and the Ad Council.
And we're back. We're talking to Dr. Diva Marie Beck, who is an outstanding clinician, nursing scholar, author, educator, international citizen activist who has worked all around the world to bring a wonderful change in the nursing and in the health care awareness for all of us. Diva, I can't wait for you to jump in on this. We had a previous conversation that we were speaking about the pathology that we live with here in the States and how we have a $2 billion cancer industry. We have an enormous amount of pathology with heart disease, obesity, diabetes. And this is indicative, as you had, alluded to previously, to the imbalance that has happened. And you have this wonderful discussion about the global immune system. We had talked about how cancer is when the immune system is out of balance, when the immune system is no longer strong to protect itself. And you started to talk about the immune system from a very global metaphor. So if you would take it away and talk about this cancerous situation that we really need to overcome.
Thank you, Georgiana. It was wonderful to look at the metaphor of the diseased body, when certainly cancer is a clear example, but the autoimmune diseases or conditions are also cancer and infections are, in reality, they are an underactive immune system, and we know that you can in order to fight off infections and to be strong against cancerous conditions, you need a strong immune system, and if you recover from cancer or from infection, it's because your immune system has kicked in. And with autoimmune disease, it's the same thing. You are over-response. So the immune system needs to be in balance. So I was, in our discussions before, I got excited about the metaphor that the cancers that our world is experiencing, the disease conditions that our world is experiencing, and we could name them, certainly concern about security and the threat of terrorism, which can be seen as a disease, and perhaps even a cancer cell where people, the cells of terrorists are working like cancer cells do to on the destruction of the health of the body, as it were. That what we look to see to say what is the global immune system, and I would propose that the global immune system consists of circulating white cells, individuals, active civil society, working on making it's literally immune surveillance, standing up and doing what is best, what they're called to do, to make the world a better place, sometimes locally and sometimes in a larger ways, nationally and globally. Some white cells, global citizens, circulate the globe, like some white cells circulate the whole body. Some work locally, just in one area in their communities. But to think of ourselves as circulating white cells to strengthen the global immune system, if enough of us are doing that, then the globe stays well.
Isn't that
the same way the body stays well with an active immune and balanced immune system?
Isn't that a wonderful way to think about ourselves globally as a whole being?
Yes.
That just like the body has organs, different organ tissue type, that doesn't mean that we can afford, that the organs can afford to function as individual, separate.
Oh, yes, there's that too.
So that when those organs, those tissues are working, they're really working not only locally, they're working globally.
Right.
And we fail to remember very often as global citizens that what we do here is felt on the other side of the world and vice versa. And so I think that it becomes so imperative for people like yourself to be heard and to be seen and to be known, to bring this message, to bring this reminder that if we do not invest in the global humanity, if we don't invest in ourselves as a family in this very tiny little planet that we're on, more and more, it looks like we are really doing ourselves in. You shared a bunch of stories with me when we were speaking before about the things you've seen around the globe. And I would love for you to address it for the audience, the kinds of need that there is, the good, the bad, the ugly. Could you share with us some of the stories of where the need is and how this loving, healing, global way of being can transform what we're presently looking at in the world today?
Well, actually, a story of a close associate of mine comes to mind as an example of what one white cell global citizen can do that has implications. This is a friend of mine named Beverly Britton, who, through a wonderful set of circumstances, was brought to the Turkish side of Cyprus in 1996, where a leader in that part of that island, who was very much like Martin Luther King for them, was assassinated a week before she arrived, and she mainly brought her loving care and attention and energy to the people who were mourning the loss of their leader, and made connections and friends with her, with the women who were working, who were mourning and working on what would they do. As you know, you probably know, the island of Cyprus has been at a sort of military standoff between the Turkish Cypriots and the Greek Cypriots for for a very, 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 very long time. And so she was just being with him in their frustration and their concern. And as she built that rapport, again, very much, Beverly's not a nurse, but working in the same way, just bringing care and presence and concern, being with the dying of a leader and the mourning of this family of Turkish Cypriots. Over time, she stayed in touch with those people and encouraged them to think about how women can be in support of finding peaceful solutions to the world's problems. And through her efforts, first with the Turkish Cypriots, and then later when she came back to the United States, she was able to connect with some women on the Greek Cypriot side who were very concerned about the issues that they were feeling just on the other side of that green line, the zone where they couldn't interact with each other because of the war. The Greek Cypriots got interested in the women there, and they weren't able to visit each other because of that green line, the demarcation zone that went across their island. But over time, they were able to arrange to have a conference with each other, with my friend Beverly involved. A number of key people from Turkish Cyprus and Greek Cyprus women came to the United States and started to meet together and make a plan. And lately, when you watch the news, every once in a while, the peace accords that are now happening to try to help the island of Cyprus to be a peaceful area again, rather than a chronic war zone, it has happened because behind the scenes, these women on both sides of this island, and with my friend Beverly as their sort of nurse, caregiver, supporter, nurturer, they are literally at the foundations of this new peace accord that's getting built.
And you know what that reminds me of when you're speaking about it? The Native American peace chiefs were women. We just see, when we see television, you know, the commercialized version of what went on in the West and what went on with the Native Americans.
Yes.
We see war councils, and we see the well-known, you know, chiefs who are men for the war councils. But in peacetime, the councils were populated with women. And what you were talking about reminded me of the need for peace councils that are made up in large measure with feminine energy and feminine intentionality.
That's right. And because nurses know so much about respect for culture, for individual voice, where we are ingrained to say that what's really important here is that this patient be honored for their own spiritual beliefs, that this patient be honored for their own ethnic, for their culture, that their healing is central to them tapping those sources for themselves, and that we are to be facilitators for that. Well, we can cross-transfer those approaches to these peace councils or to these places where we're addressing the health of individuals, the well-being of individuals in war-torn areas.
Well, it's not just in the war-torn areas. I mean, what we think of as war-torn are certainly war-torn, but when we look at even civilizations or societies that are civilized and are not in war-torn areas, we're all at war, because what seems to be at war is we're in conflict with ourselves, where, you know, we've killed off a great deal of the nurturance that women did bring to our culture by quite frankly masculinizing and technicalizing the services and the good deeds of women, such as nurses. And I think that, you know, you've made that point beautifully clear in the conversations we've had before, that while technology is so very wonderful and very important, it does take something away. And what has been taken away from nursing has also been taken away in our culture. And that is that, you know, women have been seen as, well, we can do the same job as men and we can do what men do. Yes, we can. But what can't be done is that we cannot replace that energy that women bring to sustain life. And we need to reinvigorate that and return that. comments from you about what do you see in a broader cultural perspective regarding what nurses can do to bring more balance to our consumer-driven, our celebrity-focused, you know, everybody is very celebrity-focused and very power and, you know, consumer-driven today. How do you see this shifting in nursing affecting and reinvigorating our American culture?
Well, that's another huge topic. But it occurred to me to say to you that even though we have this large commercial culture that bombards us from the television and from the opportunities we have to shop and the money we have to buy things and just the whole culture around our children and sports and the sale of Nike shoes and those things. I don't necessarily mean to be speaking about any one commercial thing, but we're caught up in this culture, and meanwhile there's this larger world that isn't living like that. But we also, when you said we're not in war-torn areas, the island of Manhattan was a war-torn area on September 11th.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
And the city of Madrid was a war-torn area just a few weeks ago, and we're finding that the globalization, the reality of the globe, and what other people are living and experiencing in East Timor or in Rwanda or in Bosnia and the former Yugoslavia and now in Iraq and Afghanistan, those realities are closer to us now than they were before. And there's also the sense that we buy things. I know I've done this myself. When I'm down, I find myself tempted to go and buy something at the mall to feel better. And I'm realizing that to really feel better, I just need to be about my own spirit's purpose in the world. And when I'm tired, if I can just spend time with, well, why am I here and what's the major meaning in my life? That I can, if I can be with that and even just send an email to a friend or be in support of someone or just be with the resonance of my own being and do something toward what my life was meant to be. Or just spend time being what I was meant to be. That the need to go shopping or the need to have the next candy bar or the next brand new dress or new shoes flows away from me, and I admit to having those needs too.
Well, Diva, hold that thought. That's a wonderful thought. We're going to take another break when we come back, and we're going to do our last segment of the show.
Okay.
Let's talk about this wonderful point that you've just made, because nursing is really about going outward, not going inward. It's about service to others rather than gratifying ourselves. So let's take a break.
We'll be back in 2 minutes. Don't go away. Hello?
Hello, Mrs. Stewart. I'm calling about your gas bill.
Oh, I know. I'm late. I'm working two jobs and doing everything I can.
Let's put a glass of water, Mommy.
Oh, I'll be there in a minute, Lisa.
Mrs. Stewart?
I'm really trying here. It's just that things are a little difficult right now.
Do you have our address, Mrs. Stewart?
Yes, I do.
Heat or food? One in five American children faces hunger because of decisions like this. To help, call 1-800-FEED-KIDS or visit feedingchildrenbetter.org. Hunger, a choice no one should have to make. A public service message brought to you by America's Second Harvest, Feeding Children Better, and the Ad Council.
Welcome to Flight 38.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm sorry, you can't sit there.
Isn't it open seating?
This is the whites-only section.
Whites only?
Mm-hmm. You'll need to move back to the color section.
Ma'am, I'm a vice president at
Sir,
a major...
Sir, please move back and we'll be on our way.
Fine.
Imagine what America would be like today if Martin Luther King never had a dream. To learn about the Martin Luther King National Memorial Project in Washington, D.C., visit buildthedream.org. A public service message from the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Foundation and the Ad Council.
Okay. So what do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? It's someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. All right, right. So what do you get when you cross a barber and a chef? A meal with all the trimmings. And that's what they're serving at a local youth center. Local merchants came together with their community coalition to make people's lives a little better. Now, what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, happier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So with your civic group, club, PTA, even your employer, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
And we're back. We're continuing our wonderful conversation with Dr. Diva Marie Beck, who is laying out a plan, which we're going to hear about in the last 5 minutes of the show, about transforming and returning nursing and returning caring to our globe as a civil, global culture and society. Diva, before we went on the break, you were just touching on something very important. You were touching on, you know, if I'm hungry, you know, I eat. If I'm itchy, I scratch. We live in a culture in America where we have all of this wonderful access and to some extent this excess that we're used to satisfying our needs, and yet we both know that nursing is about serving others, not that you do it to the exclusion of yourself, but finding that balance. So would you bring that conversation full circle, you know, from where we came in, and then would you spend some time sharing with us the initiative, the wonderful work that you're doing with others and that you're spearheading this initiative to create global nursing?
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, again, we all have needs, and and the need to eat, and our need for recognition, for self-worth, the need to have novelty, to have new things in our life, all of that are all good needs. But people make money on those needs and encourage us to just stay needy, to buy things to meet those needs. And there's a point where those needs are met. It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, as it were. If those needs are met and we're not paying attention to someone saying, well, we need the next new dress, or we need to be thinner, or all of those things, because they're making money on that, we come to a place where we feel as though we have enough so that we can share it with the world. And then there's also the large looming thing where I've heard so many people say, well, I know that there are millions of orphans, AIDS orphans in Africa, but I don't have a clue what I could possibly do about that. And in order to numb out from the pain that if we watch a show featuring what those orphans are going through, for instance, or if we watch a show focusing in on some other area where people's needs aren't being met, we feel very sad. But unless we have a way to interact with that, we just get, we feel needier ourselves, because then we feel helpless to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for myself that I do better in a critical care setting, or even in a CPR setting, you know, a trauma setting, if I can do something.
Yes, exactly.
And being with the suffering of that person helps if I have something to do. So I began to create then, if I may carry on with this global initiative.
Oh, very much so, please.
To talk about, well, now, based on what I know of how other civil society has been organized, to start to think about, well, how could I create a way for nurses to not only address the health of the world, but also to be positive, proactive people involved in the shortage of caregivers and the shortage of nurses, so that we discover a way to turn the shortage around and say, well, let's talk about how wonderful it is to be a nurse. Let's talk about being proactive nurses. Let's model that and develop some solutions not only to the shortage, but also to some of the global health issues, and create ways for a woman in Kansas or a man in Oregon to say, well, I know there's a problem in Africa, and there's a way I can get involved if I feel that spiritual calling or that spirit calling to help in Rwanda, for instance. Mm-hmm. So with those ideas in mind, I created the beginnings, and we're working on this now. We're just in the beginning stages. We're developing this, but I'm going to do a couple of sketching highlights for you around a project that we're calling the Nightingale Initiative for Global Health. We're developing a way through a series of people who have experience with this aspect of international affairs and international development. We're developing a way to create an International Year of the Nurse, United Nations International Year of the Nurse in 2010, the centennial of Nightingale's death. But my friends and who know about these kinds of initiatives were saying to me, but what Diva, what are you going to do on January 1st, 2011? After you've had a fantastic year celebrating nursing around the world and saying how fantastic nursing is and what a valuable thing nursing is, in 2011, what are you going to do? So we're also creating a plan to create a decade of creating a healthy world, which, of course, what nurses are creating a healthy world in small ways now. We create a healthy world around a patient in intensive care. We create a healthy world around in a rehab setting, in a hospice setting, and in all of the ways. We create little worlds. But now to talk about what nurses can do to create a healthy world for a decade between 2010 and 2020, the bicentennial of Nightingale's birth. So we're working on that, and in order to create the initiative, in order to create an underpinnings for this initiative, we're working to develop a declaration that nurses and other healthcare workers will be able to sign that commits them as that commits each individual who will sign this declaration will be committing themselves to the health of their own health, to the health of their community, and to health of their world, and in making that a signature campaign so that we have millions of signatures with nurses taking the lead for this in support of the United Nations resolution to create the declaration. Now, that gets a little bit complex, but we're developing the planning and the underpinnings so that as many nurses as possible, there's 10 million of us around the planet, as many of us as possible can get involved in this. And there's two other components.
Excuse me, is this the My Healthy World project?
Yes.
Yes.
And we've discovered that My Healthy World is a title that we can't have. So we're exploring now whether we can call it Our Healthy World. And stay tuned for what we're gonna call it, because we have to be sure that we haven't taken from somebody else who's using that
uh-huh.
that title.
Uh-huh.
But we're gonna also work at developing ways, resources all around the planet for nurses to connect with each other, regionally and locally, on creating Our Healthy World projects or projects where they themselves contribute to the health of their communities, to the health of the region, and then make it possible through the internet and other globalization capabilities that we have now to stay in touch with each other, so that someone in St. Petersburg, Russia, or in Prague, Czechoslovakia, or in Sri Lanka, or in Sarajevo in Bosnia, or in Johannesburg in Cape Town, or Cape Town in South Africa, can connect with someone in Los Angeles or Kansas City or Montreal, and so we can all share best practices with
mm-hmm.
each other.
Mm-hmm.
All of that's going to come into place, and we're going to do a communication strategy as well, where we have print newspapers and internet and a number of things to tell the good news of this. It's actually a large project, but it's very exciting. And the idea is to help nurses to take the lead in creating a healthy world.
Well, one of the things that we're going to do at Nurse Radio, we are going to keep in touch with you, and we're going to have you come back and talk to us about the project. And we also want to serve you and the project through the radio station to invite nurses to know more and to participate and to communicate. Because the work that you're doing, Diva, is not just important, it's urgent. We are in a global situation where if we don't stand together, we will surely fall together.
That's right.
And so I extend on behalf of all of the citizens around the globe a tremendous gratitude to you and to your passion and to your work and to your vision. And we wish you and all of the people who are working with you the absolute best and speediest completion on the project. And we are going to invite you back. I know that in May you have things going on down in Washington. You want to talk about that for a moment?
Well, yes. We're so blessed. On May 9th in Washington, D.C., the National Cathedral is hosting a Florence Nightingale service commemorating nurses on the first Sunday of Nurses Week. And so we're very blessed with that. The Secretary General of the WHO Collaborating Centers for Nursing and Midwifery, Dr. Rita Cardi, will be a speaker. And we're also having Dr. Daniel Pessett, who is the president of Sigma Theta Tau International, and student nurses, student nursing leaders, and American nursing representatives are going to be represented there. We'll pass a candle in ceremony for the sake of nursing and for the sake of what nursing brings to the world. At the Washington National Cathedral, May 9th. If anybody hears this broadcast in advance and can get there, you're most, most welcome.
Well, you are most blessed, and we are most blessed that we all have the benefit of your wonderful work, Diva. And before you go, because we are at the end of the show, would you just give those who are listening a way of getting in touch with you and your work? Do you want to give us a website, or would you like to give us a phone number, or how would you like people to contact you?
Yes, I'd like to give a website and a phone number. The website is www.florencenightingale2010, all one word, florencenightingale2010.net. And my phone number is 202-262-7534.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being good enough, for taking the time, spending the energy, and bringing all that you have to offer us individually and globally. And thank you and bless you for all the wonderful work that you're doing. And promise me that you're going to come back and you're going to give us an update and keep talking to us about what you're doing.
I will, and I hope to bring more people who are really working in the field implementing this Healthy World Project, and stories of nurses who are actually working at doing the job.
And there are so many good souls out there.
Yes.
We can end on that high note. Diva, thank you. We will speak with you again, and have a wonderful day.